Welcome, everyone, and we're going to ask people to please take their seats so that we can get started. Before we begin, I'd like to invite Viviana Marzano, who will be providing Spanish interpretation this evening, to make an announcement.
Buenas noches. Para proveer acceso lingüístico, vamos a ofrecer interpretación al inglés y al español. Good evening. In order to provide language access, we will be offering interpretation into English and Spanish. Si usted prefiere escuchar esta presentación en español, aquí tengo auriculares. If you prefer to listen to this presentation in Spanish, I have headsets over here. Thank you. Gracias.
Thank you, Ms. Marzano. I'm Christy Schmidt, and I am the Assistant City Manager here in Goleta. This is our third public workshop that we've held on redistricting in the city of Goleta. In 2017, the City Council passed a resolution to move to district elections for the four City Council seats, beginning with the November 2022 election. So the purpose of tonight's meeting is to let the public know how they can help us draw district boundaries of these new electoral districts, and give you a chance to stick around after the meeting to actually practice with some of the district drawing tools, both the online tools. If you brought a laptop, we have Wi-Fi here, and you can we've got some tables in the back, or we have paper maps that you'll be able to use. The workshop will be facilitated by National Demographics Corporation, but before we start, I want to thank the members of our Public Engagement Commission, and we have two of those members tonight. Sylvia Ribe, will you? Thank you very much. And Beth Schneider, thank you very much. They've been really instrumental in helping us to design the public input process. I'd also like to acknowledge two council members who are in the audience, Mayor Paula Perotti and Councilmember Kyle Richards. Thank you. So thank you so much. This is such an important process. The representation is key to our democracy and to the city, and so setting these district boundaries is incredibly important work. And so we want to thank you so much for being here and for providing your input into the process. We appreciate your flexibility with meeting outside tonight. We're trying to stay on top of all of the changing requirements and all of the public health recommendations. We do have access to a restroom through those doors, and you can just go, and a staff member will show you the way to the restrooms if they do need to use them. We will have, you can see there's a little cover on the microphone here. We're going to ask you to wear your masks during the presentation. When you come up to make public comment, if you're going to make public comment, you can take off the mask. And we have these little hats on the microphone that we're going to change between uses. So feel free to take your mask off when you're making public comment. And with that, I'd like to introduce our demographers from National Demographics Corporation, Dr. Doug Johnson and Dr. Daniel Phillips. There he is. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, everybody, and good evening. My name is Daniel Phillips, and I work with the NDC, and I will be giving a brief presentation on introduction to districting. And if you have been to prior workshops, there might be a little bit of repetition here, but we'll try to go through this fast so that we can get to the meat, which is actually demonstrating how these mapping tools work so you can get started. And hopefully you can hear me okay over the noise of the aircraft. So I'll try to speak loud. So just as a reminder, we're moving from the at-large election system to the by-district system, so from number one to number three on the side here. So this is because the California Voting Rights Act was written to specifically encourage that type of election system. And so that's what Goleta will be doing. Now, the process looks like this. We have three public workshops where we educate on the process and solicit input from the public. And so this is the last of those three workshops tonight. Then we will have initial pre-draft hearings, which actually also counts as tonight, but also the 17th, which will be the next regular city council meeting. So later on, once the official census data comes in, then we can actually release draft maps so that all the submissions that come in will be released to the public, and then there will be two hearings on those draft maps, one in on the 1st of February and one on the 15th, where we'll actually look at the maps and weigh the alternatives and eventually adopt one of those maps on the 1st. So when we're drawing district lines, we have to make sure that we follow three main groups of criteria. The first is following federal laws. So we have to make sure that the districts are roughly equal in population, that we follow the Federal Voting Rights Act by not diluting the voting strength of certain protected class voters, but on the flip side, not racial gerrymandering, which is making race or ethnicity the only or paramount factor. Then once we are confident that the federal law is satisfied, then we move and consider the state law. And with state law, there is a rank order of criteria. So the 1 and 2 are more important than 3 and 4. And so if you can't satisfy all of them, then you prioritize the higher ones. The first of those would be that the districts are contiguous, so they're just one piece. Each is one piece. The second is that you avoid dividing neighborhoods and communities of interest. And I'll talk a little bit more about what those terms mean. Third is following easily identifiable boundaries. So meaningful lines like freeways, our major roads, our railroads, etc. And finally, compactness. So the district should be should not bypass one group of people to get to a more distant group of people. And then state law also adds the prohibition about not favoring or discriminating against a political party. So once you are sure that you've followed federal law and state law, then you may consider other traditional districting principles. So these are not mandatory like the others, but they are something that cities like yourself might consider. One of those is respecting voters' choices / constituting an office. So the basic idea here is you avoid pairing off two incumbent council members in one seat so that you leave it to the voters to decide whether they deserve another term and not force one to leave because of the way the lines are drawn. And then the other consideration is any future population growth that might be on the horizon. You can account for that by intentionally underpopulating a certain district slightly while not straying too far from equal population. So here is a demographic summary of the city, and it's a little hard to read here, but the basic numbers to be mindful of is that your city population is roughly 31,000, and of those, 21,000 are eligible to vote, and of those, 24% are Hispanic and 64% are non-Hispanic white, and there's smaller percentages of other racial groups. Now, each of the four districts must contain about 7,800 people. So when you're drawing your districts, make sure that you try to stay close to that number. And we have maps of all these demographics in the story map, which is one of the tools we'll have available and I'll be showing shortly. So when it comes to defining neighborhoods, you want to ask two questions. First, what is your neighborhood? And second, what are its boundaries? And so you see here some examples of physical features that might define a neighborhood boundary. And so we really hope to get public testimony about what the neighborhoods are that should be kept together. But if we don't get that testimony, we would look to planning records and other similar documents to provide that. Now, going beyond neighborhoods, we have this other term called communities of interest. And again, we're asking two questions. First, what defines your community of interest? So we have a geographic area, that's the first component. And there's some shared issue or characteristic that defines that area that is impacted by city policies. So some socioeconomic traits. And then the second question is, would this community of interest benefit from being included within a single district for purposes of its effective and fair representation? So state law is really only looking at communities of interest that satisfy that definition. where if it would benefit from being in one district, then keep it in one district to the extent that you can. So this is a summary of all the mapping tools that we have available, and they can all be found at the city's districting website, which is draglita.org. And so you'll see that there are several options, and I'm going to go through each one of them very shortly. So just the final slide I have here is to pose these questions for you to think about, especially as I demonstrate the mapping tools. What are the neighborhoods in the city, and what are their boundaries, and any other notable areas in the city? Also, any questions about the mapping tools we're happy to take after I finish demonstrating. And another plug for the website. So that's it for the slideshow, and now I will turn to the website itself. So hopefully you all see that. So this is the homepage for draglita.org, and you see that you have all the basic information here, but what I really want to highlight is this tab, Draw a Map. So if you click on that, you'll see all the, there's actually 6 tools that are available. So a lot of options, and of course, you can even just draw on a paper map and paper napkin and submit that, and we'll take that and run with it. But we want to give you a diversity, a variety of tools, so that to cater to everyone's comfort level. But the first 2 tools here are more for exploring the city and getting a sense of the communities of interest and neighborhoods, and seeing the different data layers. And then 3 and 4 are the paper maps. And so we have paper maps that are available at the doorway there. But there's 2 versions, actually, of these paper maps. So make sure that you are, and I'll make clear what the difference is between these 2 versions. And then finally, there's the online mapping tools. So you have District R, which is the simpler one, the one that is probably the most user-friendly. And then you have MOR, Maptitude Online Redistricting, which is a more powerful tool. It gives you a lot more information and data, but it's got a steeper learning curve. So if you're brave enough to try that, you can certainly do so. But I'm going to focus on demonstrating the first 5 tools. And if people want me to demonstrate that, I can. So the first tool here is the story map. And I've gone through this before in other workshops, but I just want to point out just a very few pieces of data that might be of interest, especially when you're thinking about communities of interest. One of these is the 8 sub-areas that the city actually defined. So this is part of its general plan. And these are pretty large units, but they could be useful in thinking about these are something that the city identified as being meaningful divisions of the city. So just something to consider there. If school attendance areas are meaningful to you, then you can check that out by clicking on this button and seeing the elementary school attendance areas. But if you scroll down, you can see that there is all sorts of different data that you can look at. One that I like to highlight is land use. So you can see in yellow the areas that are more single family residential, and in red are more commercial areas, and you can see the more industrial areas as well. So that might be useful to look at. And this is actually, this is important when it comes to satisfying the Federal Voting Rights Act, because the courts have actually said that citizen voting age population by race, ethnicity is the key data point to look at when it comes to satisfying that law. So this is where you can look at each of those racial or ethnic groups and see where they concentrate, if they concentrate at all in the city. So if you look at percent Latino, you can see that if you click on the button, the areas that show up in warmer colors are the ones where there are higher concentrations of Latinos in the city. So you see it particularly in Old Town over here, and then to a lesser extent in the Northwest and the Southwest residential areas. And you can look at other demographics of interest, such as percent who speak Spanish at home, or percent who live in renter housing. Now, these units are larger than the ones that I showed you before with the citizen voting age population data, but they still might be helpful. So that's the story map in a nutshell. Now, the second tool is showing you the same data that you get in the story map. It's just it's not presented like a PowerPoint or a story. It's more giving all of it out there and leaving it up to you to decide what you want to check and uncheck to display. So if you want to see a certain combination of layers displayed at a particular time, then you have that option here. And this is also where we're going to eventually post the draft maps for the city. So all the public submissions and all the official maps that we draw will get posted and displayed on this interactive map. So next are the paper map tools. So the most basic paper map tool looks like this. And if, let's see if I can zoom in here. Well, hopefully you can see it okay, but okay, there it goes. So if you look here, you can see that there are numbers in each of these little areas. These are population units that we've devised for the city. And the number is the estimated population that lives in each of these units. And so you can use this version, it's called the Public Participation Kit, to actually draw your own district lines. And you can add up these population units manually to see if you can draw four districts that are close to 7,800 people. And so that's the most basic tool, and the one that doesn't require any computer knowledge. But this tool here is the other version of the paper map. And here, note that it says, use this map with the Microsoft Excel Kit Supplement. So the difference between this map and the other map is that instead of showing population figures in each of those units, it shows ID numbers. So it just gives each of the units a particular identification. And so the reason for that is you use this with the Excel tool and actually assign all the population units according to its ID. So if you look here, you see that under population unit, it goes from 1 all the way to 54. So there are 54 population units, and these are the IDs for each of those. And so you use this to actually assign each of those population units to a particular district. So if you want to assign these to District 1, you just type in 1. If you want to assign these to District 2, you type in 2, and so on. And as you do that, you will see that these numbers at the top change, because these are showing you how close you are to the ideal population of 7,800. And so these all start off as 0, and so there's a 7,800 difference between the ideal. But as you assign more of these to a particular district, let's just say they're all in 1, then you'll notice that the cell next to D1 gets lower, closer and closer to 0. Until eventually you actually get above 0. And so this will be helpful because you can see how close you get to that ideal population. And then once you assign all of the population units to a particular district, then you can go to the results tab and actually see what the total population deviation is. So if you had given each of these population units to a certain district, then you will see a total deviation shown here, and it will show up as green if it's under 10%, which is kind of the benchmark we look at for determining whether it's equal enough in population. And it also is nice because it shows you the breakdown by the citizen voting age population numbers for the Voting Rights Act considerations. So that is so the nice thing about this tool is it does the math for you. You don't have to manually calculate it up like you do for the most basic tool, but it does require some knowledge of Excel. So that is the second version of the paper tool. And finally, we have the online mapping tools. And so would now be a, do you want me to leave them the opportunity to ask questions about the tools that I've talked about so far, or go right into the District R?
Why don't you go right into District R, and then we'll let people ask each of the tools.
Okay. Sounds good. So the last one I'll talk about, unless you want me to get into MR, which I'm happy to, but just because it's simpler and more user-friendly, is the District R tool. So District R, if you click on this, it will take you to this page. And it is the designated page for all the Goleta District R submissions. And what you'll notice here is there are two boxes here, a purple box and a red box. The purple box is for you to actually draw four districts, like an actual district plan. The red box is for you to just depict your neighborhood or your community of interest. So as people submit to District R, it will pop up here if they give a certain name to it, and you can see other people's submissions and actually build off of other people's submissions as well. But I'm just going to demonstrate how to do the community one first. So if you click on that, you will be taken to this map of the city. And the first thing you should notice is that there is a sidebar here, and it has a community name. So whatever community that you want to depict, we ask that you give it a name so that we can just have a sense of what it is and why it's meaningful. And we also ask that you give a description of why it's meaningful in this box. So once you figure out what you want to draw, then you can go to this tool here, which is the paintbrush tool. So this paintbrush tool allows you to color in any census block within the city. Now, it has a pretty large brush size at the beginning, and you see it says 20. So that as you look here, you see it's it covers a lot of area. If you reduce the brush size to something like 5, then you see it it doesn't take in as many. Of course, if you want to be really detailed, you could just make it 1. But the idea here is you have flexibility to make your brush as big as you want. So if you zoom in with the top left plus or minus, you can find a neighborhood. It could be your neighborhood, or it could be another neighborhood that you don't live in, but you still have a good idea of what it is. So use the pan tool, this little finger guy, to pan to where you want to draw. If you go to data layers, you can see that there is a demographics that might be helpful for you drawing your community. So if you check that, you can see that the variable that shows up right off the bat is children at home. And you can see there's a noticeable block group here that has very few children at home. And this happens to be a retirement community. And so makes sense, right? So perhaps, okay, I want to depict that as my community. So then you go to the paintbrush tool up here, and you just draw that in, and by holding down your mouse, and there it is. So, but the nice thing about this is it allows for overlapping neighborhoods or communities. So let's say that you live in this community, but you also feel that you have a larger community, like the Northeast residential area, something like that, or the Fairview neighborhood, whatever you want to call it. Click this plus sign here, and that will bring up another color to put on top of that. So let's get rid of the demographics by unchecking, and let's zoom out a little bit. We'll make the brush size something like 10, and then we just color in this whole area here. And so we overlap, so we still include that Encino Royale area, but we have the whole Northeast now as a community, another community of interest that you want to represent to us. And then if you want to add another, you can say do Old Town or something like that. So if you make a mistake, you also have the ability to erase. So if you didn't want to include this little area, just use the eraser. So once you feel like you've faithfully represented your communities, you would just click Save here. And you can save it either as something that you want to share now or save it as a work in progress. And if you want to have it show up on that public gallery, then you would give it a particular name and share it to the gallery. So that is how you do the community tool. And so the draw district tools is very similar to that. It's the same functionality of the paintbrush and the eraser and the, but one thing I do want that is a crucial difference is this graphic here, which shows the population balance. And this is really nice because it shows you how close you are to the ideal without having to bother with all the Excel numbers and such. So if you wanna, let's say, draw the first district somewhere around here, you can see this bar is getting closer to the ideal line as you fill in more of it. And then eventually it will surpass it. So then you can say, okay, I'm done drawing that district and I actually want to lock it in so that I don't mess it up when I am drawing another district. Then you can click the next color, which is yellow for district 2, and then draw in some more there. So, and you can see that this bar is getting closer to that ideal line as well. But I went a little too much, so I'll use my eraser tool and get rid of a few up here. And you can see that the population deviation right now is 3.96%, which is pretty good. If you click on this checkmark here, which is highlight unassigned units, you see in red all the ones that you might have missed. So you can see in the corners here, I missed those. So I'll go back to my brush tool, make sure I'm selecting blue, and I'll make sure those are taken care of because we don't want those non-contiguous pieces. So then we can then, once I draw another two districts, I'll do the same procedure of saving the plan and tagging it if you want. So I think that's a good basic overview. Is there anything I missed that I should cover? Yeah?
Can you show how you can take a map that someone else has submitted and work from there?
Sure. So if you go to the public gallery, you can see that there are four maps that have been made available by public submission so far. And so if we were to take a look at one of these, this plan is actually, so you can see that this person drew four districts that are pretty well population balanced. You see it's 4.42%. So if, but maybe you want to change the way they colored in these ones. So if you you can just, it's basically like starting your own, but using another's as a template. So you if you want to color in these as blue, just make sure you're selecting blue and get your brush size down a little bit, and then you can fill these in and call it your own plan. Save it as your own plan. And you can see that the population deviation is still pretty good. So if I want to do that, I would just save it, and then it would pop up as my own plan, even though it's mostly someone else who did most of the work. Yeah.
Just to emphasize, you're not changing the original. It's creating mm-hmm. a copy, and then you're working
yeah.
on
it. Yeah, it's a copy that is your own. Yeah, good question. So do you want to turn to question and answer time now? Or?
Okay. With that wonderful presentation, I bet you all have a lot of questions. So I'm going to ask you to come and line up to the side, ask your questions, and see if we can get those answered. We encourage those questions, okay? So come on, first one up. No questions? Any questions today? Come on up.
And they can be your thoughts, too. Not just questions, if you want to hear about communities of interest.
Yes, we're especially asking about communities of interest, so please go ahead and share your thoughts with us.
It was a simple question. You may have already answered it. Did you already include, like, the apartment complex that's under construction here and the future one that's right over here in our projected numbers, or are they not included?
So the answer is no. So the census only counts the people who were actually there about 15 months ago, on April 1st of 2020. So the equal population is based totally on that April 1st number.
But you wanted us to consider that.
Right, I was going to say. As Daniel mentioned, if you know that there are apartment buildings coming, you can underpopulate that district, but only by a couple of percent, 5% at the most. So if you knew there was going to be construction, then you'd put that district a little bit short of balance. But it is limited. And I should emphasize, too, the numbers on the sheets and the numbers we're using in the system are estimates. As you're probably aware, the census data is not out yet. So it is likely that the final maps will need to be tweaked a little bit once we get the official data. But we hope these numbers are pretty close.
Hi. So there were two kinds of maps. This was one where the population shows as you add sectors. The kind of map before that, which was appealing, but I couldn't tell if and when you could see the population associated with the sectors you create. Okay. With the other kind of map.
Are you talking about the paper map?
No.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, so when we're talking about the community one, so when we're talking about communities, it's not as important what the population of the community is, because there's nothing in the law that says communities of interest are only those that have a certain amount of people living in them. They can be small, they can be large, and so they're whatever are meaningful to you. But if you are interested in what their population is, so if you were to draw one here, you can go to the population here and, the evaluation, and see that there is 1,654.765 people. The 0.765 is because it's estimates that we calculated using a formula, but once the official census data is in, it'll be whole people. But yeah, so yeah, if you want to see how many people live in a certain area, that's where you do it.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions. One is, are you only wanting input from Goleta residents or from anyone in the world? And do you need to show that you're a Goleta resident to use the tools or to submit something? And that kind of thing. And my other question is, I did not understand what you meant by compactness. Okay. Thank you.
So to answer your first question, you do not have to be a Goleta resident to submit a map. In fact, perhaps you live just outside Goleta in Nolita or Santa Barbara, and you commute to Goleta and are very familiar with it, so you might have a good idea of what the areas are like. But we just want to get the best map, and if it happens to come from someone who doesn't live in Goleta, then so be it. But we definitely encourage submissions from Goleta residents, of course. But your second question was, what was your second question? The compactness. Yes. Yes. So, compactness. If you were to, let me see if I can demonstrate by drawing a purposefully non-compact district. So, let's say I drew something that looked. Something that looked like this. So that would be a non-compact district because what you're doing is you're bypassing one area to get to a more distant area. And so you have, I know there's little holes in it, so it's not contiguous either, but if you were to draw a district like that, then that would be considered non-compact. So you'd want to try to draw a district that kind of has a sensible shape, if that makes any sense. But it is a lower criteria. So if you need to satisfy higher criteria, like not dividing neighborhoods or not violating the Federal Voting Rights Act, and that results in some non-compact districts, then that might have to be the result. But hopefully that won't be the case.
Somebody else had mentioned future developments, and I think that would be very important information to have available for this planning purpose. I would like to know, for example, all approved developments that are still to be, you know, done in the future. Nothing that's being talked about or, you know, submitted, but whatever has already been approved, I would like to know what that is and where that is, if it would be possible to make that information available. Because I think, you know, we're developing something for the future, not for 18 months ago, although our data reflects that. So I think that's a very important piece of the information that would be needed to put intelligent districts together.
I just want to check and make sure this is only related to voting. In other words, there's no socioeconomic implications of choosing what the district looks like, other than your representation in that. Is that correct?
Yes, so this is for voting districts, but it will affect who is voted onto the city council, and they will have policy decisions that will affect socioeconomic factors. So when we're talking about communities of interest, that is like a socioeconomic area that has a particular socioeconomic interest that they want to maintain and be faithfully represented. So socioeconomics are important here, but it's a more of an indirect thing. Yeah.
Okay, my question is three questions. What happens if nobody runs in a certain district? Second question is, under the current city council, if we did have a district which would be called Old Town between Fairview or Patterson and just other side of the airport here, there's two of them already living there. Is there a grace period for them? How would that work for the next, you know, election or so? And my last question is, how often does this have to be updated under law? Thank you.
So the no candidate scenario, if no one runs, it's just like any other vacancy. So there'd be up to the council to decide whether they want to appoint someone or hold a special election. Whoever they wanted to appoint or whoever wanted to run in that special would have to be from the district. So it's pretty rare. We did just have a scenario in King City, which is a tiny city, where no the incumbent decided not to run again and no one ran. So they convinced him to run as a write-in. We call him Landslide Valenzuela. He got reelected with 6 votes. but that is, we found that to be pretty rare. What we do see is more uncontested elections, where if the incumbent is running again, they're less likely to have someone else running. But it is a vacancy just like any other vacancy, but the replacement does have to come from the district. But typically, that's not hard to find someone. People may not be willing to run as a candidate, but they're willing to apply for the vacancy appointment. Second question was... The two council members together. So going to districts doesn't impact any council member's current term. So even if two of them are together, they would finish their current term until 2022 or 2024, depending on what year their current term ends. So, and interestingly enough, actually, they remain an at-large council member officially for that whole current term, because that's how they were elected. The rule is you represent whoever elected you. So if that was at large, you stay at large. If you were elected by district, you're by district. But when it comes time to run again, that's when they need to be in a district that is up that at that time. It can get a little weird if a council member whose term goes until 2024 ends up in a district that's up in 2022. They can run midterm. And if this almost never happens, but we've seen it twice now. If they win the district seat, they actually resign the last 2 years of their at-large seat, creating a 2-year vacancy at the at-large seat, and they're sworn into the district seat. But like I said, that's pretty rare. But it can happen. But yeah, the main thing is no impact on your current council and their current terms. And the third question was...
Like how often this happens.
Oh yeah, perfect. So how often this happens, it is after each census. And there used to be the opportunity to, if you had a lot of growth, to do it mid-decade, but the state has now changed that. So unless you annex a large populated territory, and it has to be populated at the time of annexation, most annexations are future growth areas, and short of that situation, the lines will not be changed until after the 2030 census data come out. That'll be even wilder, because under our current schedule, the 2032 election will be in March. So while hopefully we won't have a COVID delay in the data, we will have a shorter window of time to get this done, because the deadline will be shorter, because it'll be a presidential year. So, anyone else?
Is the time frame still mid-August for initial data dump and then September for rest?
Yes, so mid-August we'll get the official federal census data. And then in mid to late September, we'll get the California redistricting data, which I don't think will have that big of an impact here difference. But what's happening is the state is taking the state prison population, zeroing out the prisons, and counting those folks at their last known home address. So the data that we have to use in the end is that official California data that's coming out in mid to late September.
Thank you. Just to be clear, so if an incumbent is running for re-election and someone from that same district want to run, they cannot run, or they can? Okay, thank you.
So if the incumbent is running, can someone run against him, right? Yeah. From the same district, yeah. Yeah, so anyone can run as long as they live in that district. Okay. We would encourage any public testimony about neighborhoods or communities of interest that you feel are really important to preserve in this process. We're trying to come up with a list that we can submit to the city council at the next meeting. So if you have an idea, you could just depict it on the District R with the community tool. But if you want to verbally tell us at this time, we would appreciate that. So just want to encourage that.
Is there actually already a list?
So there is somewhat of a framework. The city, there was a public engagement commission came up with some ideas for communities of interest, and then the city had a list from back in their original districting process that, what was that? What year was that? Yeah, incorporation. Yeah, so we have some We have some of an initial sense of the important, but we would like to hear more from you about certain areas that are important to you.
Do we have access to that list?
The question is, do they have access to that list?
So there was a Public Engagement Commission meeting, and we'll be happy to post that onto our drawgoleta.org website. When I went to the Public Engagement Commission, and within that staff report, it'll have the communities of interest in there, and you'll be able to get it there. So perhaps we'll help you out with some links on the website so you can have that information.
I thought of one other question. When looking at communities and areas within the city, I noticed on the drop downs you had ethnicity. I saw some economic information. I don't remember if there was anything about crime. If there are any property crime statistics or personal assault type of crime statistics, that I think would just be useful information in understanding, you know, what goes on in the different areas of the city. And in case that information wasn't there, if it's possible to bring that in, I think that would be also useful information.
It's a good question, actually. Sometimes we do get like patrol beats and those kinds of questions. But the catch is that all the data that's in there is from the Census Bureau. It all comes from the American Community Survey that they update every year. So it isn't decennial census data. It's data they update every year. But that's the only data we can get at these geographic areas. Doesn't mean you can't go to other sites and look at that data and then use it in your testimony or in your mapping, certainly. But we don't have access to that we can easily put in here.
Do you know of other sites that have that information? Or is that something we could talk about offline? But I don't know.
Yeah, the question is if we know of sites that compile that in a map form, and I don't. I know there's various sites that will collect and put lists up, but I don't know folks that map them.
So I did want to follow up with the communities of interest question. We will most definitely tomorrow be placing that list on the website. Like I said, it's drawgoleta.org. And it's going to be important for us to get your feedback if you draw your communities of interest there, or if you just have any feedback at all, then make sure that you go ahead and contact us. There's a contact name and number on drawgoleta.org. And it's deadline associated. We're going to be taking a staff report to the council on August 16th, asking them to adopt those communities of interest. So if you can get that information to us by, you know, August 8th, 9th, that would be wonderful.
So if there aren't any questions or our testimony, we would like to let you know that we're going to have a forum for you to actually draw your own maps right here if you choose to do so. We have the paper maps that are available, so you can either take them home or use them at home, or we have tables in the back where you could sit down and draw on the maps, and we would be here to help you with that if you have any questions or need any guidance in that. And if any of you happen to bring a laptop and want to actually receive help using either the District Art tool or the more advanced MR tool, this would also be a opportunity to do that if you so choose. So just wanted to let you know about that.
And if you will be staying behind to draw your maps, we have internet access. We have it's City of Goleta Guest, and it has a password back there. But before we end this session, and to tell you all thank you so much for your time, I just wanted to remind you all, I'm not sure if we mentioned it earlier, Dr. Phillips was so great in giving us the timeline that we have to come ahead of us. There's a couple of meetings that we just actually added. October 21st, we're going to have a Public Engagement Commission meeting. And this is going to be the fourth and final public workshop on the districting process and how to submit a proposed district map. So again, that's going to be a hands-on type of thing. Again, October 21st, okay? Those are held at 6 p.m. Also, in January, January 26th, there's going to be a public engagement commission meeting. And this meeting is to consider the maps that are submitted and therefore the public engagement commission to provide input and a recommendation to the city council. So those are important. I'd like to see you all there, okay? And unless we have anything else? Okay, well then here's where we invite you to go ahead and roll up your sleeves. Come join us on the tables in the back. If you have a laptop, we're here to help you. Okay, thank you.